Are you dealing with a difficult time in youth ministry? Then stick around, because today we're talking about 5 ways to help you stay afloat.
Welcome to the Ministry Coach Podcast, the coach for the coachless in youth ministry. My name is Jeff Lascola, and this is
Kristen Lascola.
And I know you've probably been in a situation, we all have, where there's just turmoil going on, whether in your ministry or life, you know, whatever. So what are some of the ways that you can kind of stay afloat, both personally and ministerially during those times?
Where does one end and the other begin, right? They're kind of one and the same. So yeah, maybe you've hit a rough patch in ministry and it's kind of bleeding over to your personal life. Maybe your attendance is down. That's the classic, oh, I'm the worst.
I'm quitting. You know,
the rain cloud Eeyore kind of thing. When our attendance is down, we're down.
Yeah.
And we feel like, what is going on? What am I doing wrong? Or maybe you have some internal turmoil at church. Like maybe there's internal drama or tension, or the church is just going through a hard time internally with someone getting fired or failing, or there's just something. Or maybe there's just bad chemistry or some drama somewhere and it's really eating at you. And, you know, I think I've been through all 3 of those examples and more. And it can really be deflating and very defeating. And it just is hard for us to keep our spark. And I think this is the point where a lot of youth pastors kind of question, like, I don't know, maybe this isn't for me. But today we're going to talk about, because I don't know like your specific why are you having a hard time, but today we're going to talk about 5 more just general principles. No matter what type of hard time you're going through in ministry, in your church, in your youth group, here's some 5 general like mindset things that have really helped me. So number 1 is this: don't panic. And we've talked about this before. Just don't panic. I think as soon as something goes wrong, we just think that means I'm doing something wrong. Yeah. Something's off. This isn't good. This is a bad environment. I got to get out of here. And we just are like, like where's the nearest exit door? And it can be like, whoa, hold on. Let me put a little bit of perspective there for you, is that one of the tests of leadership is how well you navigate difficult times. Your attitude matters and more than everyone else's. If you're in ministry or leadership for any length of time, you're going to hit a hard time.
Yeah.
And the hard time isn't necessarily an indicator of like something is terribly wrong. And like, no, there are just hard times in leadership, hard times in ministry. And as a leader, it's our job to navigate them and lead well through them. Because I say through them, because you will come out the other side. You won't stay in that forever. So don't take it too personally to think that a hard time is somehow reflective of you and your leadership and that you're lacking somewhere. I mean, sometimes that is true,
right?
And we'll get to that, but sometimes it's not. It's not always true that the problem is you. Kind of sounded like Dr. Seuss. Either way, what if it is you and what if it's not? Either way, don't freak out, because both scenarios can be solved and have a solution. And really, I like to remember that I'm not alone. So I think of all the like Old Testament leaders that had a really hard time. Like God had called them, equipped them, and chosen them. That was very clear. But like my favorite is Deborah. And I think of her, like she couldn't even get her military commander to listen to her and go into battle. Like he did, but he was like a big wuss about it, right? And it like, and she said, God said this. And he's like, and he was doubtful and he was questioning and he was very scared. And I think of Moses. Like Moses like had to deal with a bunch of complainers. Like, was it because his leadership? They told Moses, I wish we would have died back in Egypt. That's how much they didn't want to be where he was leading them. They preferred death over Moses's ministry. And I'm like, oh my gosh, how did he not just like wring their necks? I think about David, the leader, like you think you have a bad senior pastor. Saul tried to murder David, like multiple times. Regular. Like your senior pastor chasing you with a spear all over like the foothills of Israel. I don't think so. And so Abraham, you know, I don't know if you saw his only son. Oh, it was so good. And the scene, you know, where Abraham's asked to make this like unthinkable sacrifice and had to make a really hard decision. All of these leaders find themselves in impossibly difficult situations. Mm. Does that mean they weren't the right one for the job? No, because we see from scripture, they were 100% called. Like God called Moses and God called Deborah, God called David, God called all of them. Mm-hmm. God called all the prophets. Was their ministry easy? No. And I think intuitively know that we're Bible teachers. We know this, but then somehow the principle gets lost on us. And as soon as we hit a hard time, we're like, I'm not made for this, you know? And it's like, are you wandering in the desert for 40 years with a bunch of complainers with snakes biting everybody? Like, and them telling you they wish they were dead. Like, and then you kind of have that to wait till like they all die. Mastery. Doesn't it? Does. It's a metaphor for youth ministry.
There's a bunch of snakes biting everybody.
Probably should call. It's a game. It's an icebreaker.
I'm going to have to call a senior pastor and tell him about this.
Oh, but I'm like, poor Moses. If that was my calling, like, hey, you get to wander on a desert for 40 years with a bunch of whiners. There's going to be snakes. And then there's going to be worms eating your food. And then you're not going to get to go to the promised land because you lost your temper. I'd be like, could you call someone else then, please? Right. You know, so don't freak out. You're in good company. If leadership is difficult, you're probably doing it right. You know, leadership
is hard. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any leader in the Old Testament or probably even New Testament, but no.
Yeah, think of Paul. Holy cow.
Anybody
he got bit by a snake too.
That's true. Didn't face him though.
He's cool. He's chilling.
But you know, that didn't have any sort of hardship, turmoil, anything like that. Like, I feel like they all did. Right. Maybe there is, and I just can't think of it right now, but I can't recall any.
No. And you know, I think leaders have got to exercise resilience. Like, we're going to go through it. You've got to be resilient. Don't panic. Maybe it is you. And so that kind of brings us to number two. Like, sometimes it's just ministry and we have a target on our back and the enemy would love nothing more than to take us out, mm-hmm. you know, and to make us think like God is not good. And why did God bring me here? And I would have rather died, you know, in my desk office job than be in youth ministry, you know, but like, what if the problem is you? What if you have, because sometimes we blame other people, but yeah. It's like, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem, it's me. And we have to be honest and look at ourselves and say, oh shoot, this mess is of my own making. Right. And that's okay. It still doesn't mean you're disqualified. It means you've got some learning and growing to do, which we all do. Like, I don't think anyone is like a ready-made youth pastor. We really go through the ringer. We have to kind of own up to our own behavior and mistakes and immaturity sometimes. And that is quite all right, as long as we're learning and growing and not repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again. So there might be an actual issue that needs to be addressed. So here's the thing. It's going to take some humility and fix what you can. Fix what you can. Leaders take action and solve problems. There might be an area in your ministry that you've let go and it's become unhealthy and it's been unattended to for way too long and you need to address it. Maybe there's a leader who's toxic and you're just too afraid to confront them. Mm. Maybe you struggle with pride and you can never admit your mistakes and you know, you drop the ball on something, but you pass the blame to someone else and it caused some fallout. Maybe you're really disorganized and it left people so confused, like, what time are we meeting? Yeah. When, where? But you haven't really owned that mistake. Maybe you are disrespectful to your senior pastor. It's a pride issue and you think you know better than them. And so you're constantly butting heads. Whatever. There's a ton of issues it could be.
No, I want you to name a few more.
Oh, okay. Do you want to name some of mine? What are my issues?
We don't have a podcast long enough.
Oh, you're so predictable.
Yeah.
You know, but those are, I think, some of the most common ones that I think youth pastors struggle with. It's usually a pride issue. It's usually an insecurity issue. It's usually an organization issue or a relationship issue, mm-hmm. you know? And then remember too, maybe it's not your public persona, but your private persona. So are you who you claim to be in public? And, you know, there's that whole story we've talked about before of Achan and the sin in the camp where he hides the stuff under his tent and everyone's going down because of his sin. Yeah. And it's like, well, the ministry could be brought down because of your personal sin, right, that you're doing behind the scenes. Is God not blessing your ministry because you're Achan and you've got some stuff that you're not owning up to that's being hidden? You know, live a clean, blameless, righteous life privately and publicly. And that what you do in private does affect your public ministry. Yeah. So be careful of that. So you might be in a season of rebuilding and repairing what you have messed up personally, but please don't give up hope, because as long as you're willing, you can course correct. Who do you need to apologize for? Like what, like humble
apologize
pie?
For and to.
Yeah. What did I say?
Apologize for. Let me apologize for Kristen for messing that line up.
Did I say, who do you need to apologize for?
Yeah.
Oh. I had a lot of jokes running through my head on that one. But anyways, so evaluate your health and the ministry health, because you are in charge of those things and you can make a difference. Number three, stay consistent. So I think my eraser just fell. Whatever. Stay consistent. So I think sometimes pastors are like, you know, we just need to take a break. Like things are just getting crazy. Like we're going to take a season off. No, that is not the issue. That is not going to solve it. Maybe you need to take a sabbatical. Okay, that's fine. I am very against stopping ministry, like very against it. I feel like it's hard to gain momentum, and momentum comes over time with consistency and continual positive experiences. And if you need a sabbatical and you can't offer a positive experience anymore, well, just, I guess, find someone who can. Maybe like I went on maternity leave and Jeff stepped in before, and that was like
killed all the momentum.
You know, it was a bad season, but at least we met. I just think like, unless it's a dire situation, really don't cancel. Find a way to meet and find a way to appreciate who is there, not who isn't there. And I think that sometimes like, well, our attendance is so low, maybe we just need a reset. No, just keep going and just focus on the people that are still coming. As long as you still have a kid, some kids, whatever, like it is worth meeting. Like it is. And I think we all struggle with this where it just almost like if there's like four kids, you're like, this isn't even worth it.
Right.
It is. It is so worth it. And it's hard, I will admit, you know, to wonder like, hey, you four, how's it going? Like sometimes it's much easier to be in front of a crowd than to have to really dig in with four people, because a crowd, it's just energy.
Yeah.
But when it's people,
every joke is funnier.
Totally.
Every game is usually more fun.
But when it's people, you have to do the hard work, like face to face and relationship skills, and it feels harder and all that stuff. Like when it's just a crowd of energy, it's just,
I think, and that's the big reason I think a lot of youth ministries stop during the summer.
Yeah.
Is because, you know, so many families go on vacation and attendance a lot of times will dip. It's pretty normal. But I think, yeah, when people say like, oh, I only have three or four kids coming, if you look at it based off of the individual, so let's say your ministry is normally 25 kids when you're really running, you know, full steam, and that's 25 students that said, I want to be here.
Amazing.
And then in all of a sudden summertime, you dwindle down. Now you only have eight, but it's still eight people saying, I want to be here. If you say, well, there's not enough people, we're not coming, it's like you eight don't matter.
Yeah.
You know, and the other, oh shoot, I can't do the math. The other, however many adds up to 25. Why can't I think of 17? The other 17 people, those are the ones that matter. We do it for them, not for you eight.
Well,
I don't think it communicates a good message. And then, even if they don't internalize that to be like, oh, I guess we're not worth it, I you're killing all that momentum, because now it's like, well, you might as well, like, you're starting a new youth group in the fall. Who wants to start a new youth group once
every
a year?
Every fall? No way. Yeah. I do not take the summer off. I do not recommend taking the summer off for all the reasons that you said. I totally agree with them. And I would say with that, not only meet, but keep your quality up.
Yeah.
Maybe it looks a little different because it's like, oh, well, we can't play that game. The group's too small, whatever. It could look different, but the quality can stay the same. Yeah. Like people can kind of feel when you've checked out or given up or let go or something like that. And it's just, yeah, don't expect to like maintain your momentum into the fall. Like you said, you can't push restart every single year. Right. Now, it's one thing, I take 2 weeks off for Christmas and whatever, and that's to give everyone a break, but they're raring to go when they come back. It's just these long stretches of we don't meet during the summer. And you know what's so funny? I've never taken the summer off, ever. Yet every year, I have students that are like, bye, I'll see. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'll see you next week. What? We have chaos in the summer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, hello, why would we not?
Right.
Like, we never have not, you know?
Right.
Whatever. Okay. Number four, this goes along with it. Focus on what's important. So when you feel like you're in a season where you're just trying to stay afloat and nothing seems to be going well, morale is down, attendance is down, just go back to why you started in the first place. Focus on what is important. What is important in ministry? Relationships. Mm. That's it. And so focusing hardcore on like, let me just be there for the people who are here. Really dive in deep, get to know them, pour into them, love them, acknowledge them, like minister to them, pray for them, disciple them, whatever it might be. I think those hard times can help ground us and get us back to why did we start this in the first place? Because when it's like lights, camera, action in the crowd and the buzz and you're like flying high and you're feeling all the energy, you're almost crowd surfing on the energy and it's so much fun. Well, that's a good time. Mm-hmm. That's not like totally ministry, you know, like sitting and talking with someone about their life and their family and praying for them and discipling them and asking them good questions. That's ministry. So when you go through those seasons where maybe that spark isn't there, just go back to relationship, go back to people, like get grassroots again and watch those seeds sprout and grow and that become contagious. Everybody wants to feel loved, valued, seen. And no matter what's going on in your ministry, whether there's 8 people or 80 people or 800 people, you can focus on relationships. Yeah. Now, if that's through you and through your small group leaders or whatever, maybe it's like you need to focus on your leaders and those relationships because you have too many kids and you can't really know them all. Maybe you only have a few kids and you can really focus on those relationships. And, you know, the summer lends itself even to spending some extra time and doing some different things with them. But
I think that last line you said, doing different things, because take advantage of what you've been given, like in the sense that if your group is smaller, going back to the summer example, if your group is smaller in the summer, what are the things that you can't do normally with the group because it's too big?
Yeah.
That you can do when it's smaller. There's certain games that you can probably play that you normally couldn't. There's more discipleship directly to the students that you could do that you maybe you wouldn't as the youth pastor have that personal contact with.
Totally.
So what are all those things? Like, I feel like we have 2 young girls. And when we ever like, well, you're taking one of them to do something and I'm taking the other, there's certain things, partly because of the age difference, partly because sometimes when we're all together, it's just chaos. But there's certain things you can do with one daughter, just you and her, that like, well, like the younger one wouldn't want to go and see this movie or wouldn't even be able to sit through a movie, you know, so I can go into it, the older one to go, you know, just little things like that that can make it special. And like you said, you never drop the quality. It's like less people, less quality. No, keep the quality up, but focus on doing some of those things that maybe you didn't normally have the chance to do because your size was bigger during the fall or spring or whatever.
Yeah, like Saturday night this weekend, I had a small group. Like there just wasn't a lot of people at church on Saturday night. And there was this girl who I got to talk to like more in depth than I ever have before. Like she had changed her name and I never really knew why. Mm. And then I kind of was able to ask her like, So can I call you by your previous name? Are you still going by this name? Like, no, I want to go back to my old name. Hmm. Okay. Like, tell me about that. Like, you never really told me why. And when there's a crowd and there's so many kids, cause she doesn't come to our midweek program. I don't get to have those kind of conversations with her, cause I'm getting hit in the head with a dodgeball and people need cookies and kids are spilling water on my air hockey table and I have to clean it up. It's like just this hustle bustle. And it was so quiet. And then her and I played Taco Cat goat cheese pizza together and had a cool connection. And I never really get to talk to her very personally, but in the quiet of that service, without so many other kids bugging me, I got to have a moment. And I really loved that, you know, because she's kind of a mystery to me. But you know how there's some kids that just, they wear their emotions on their sleeve and you know exactly what they're thinking because they say exactly what they're thinking. And then there's those kids where you're like, I need time to excavate, you know, what's going on and really develop a relationship with you. She's one of those. And those kids get lost in a shuffle, especially if they don't come to your midweek program and that's where all my small group leaders are. So it's like, well, hopefully we get time to know you at church on a Sunday. Yeah. Like, so yeah, I hear what you're saying. And then fifth and finally, know your audience. And this one has always been what I go back to because I always feel like, who am I doing this for? Like, I think back to when Deborah had to lead Israel and Barak wasn't like on board and Abraham with the Israelites and David fighting for his life and all these, I think of like what gave them the strength to keep going. And I'm like, it had to be, they knew who their audience was. Like Moses's audience was not the Hebrew people. Like he knew you guys are human and you're a bunch of whiners, but I'm doing this for the Lord God, you know, and just to feel like that is what gives him the strength to keep going and going and going and going and not abandon the mission. And sometimes when ministry is really hard, I think like, I'm not doing this for these families or these kids that aren't grateful or that don't say thank you, or this person who misunderstands me or my ministry or is a complainer or whatever it might be. Those people are not who I'm going to answer to. Like at the end of my life, they're not going to be there. I'm going to be standing before one person and I only need to hear them say, well done. I hope other people could say the same, but that's not what I can hang my hat on of making sure everybody liked what I did all the time. You know, as long as I know I'm pleasing God and doing what he's called me to do, I feel like I almost am. Like sometimes I get in that mindset of like, I'm doing way too many important things to care what you think, you know, other people, not God. But like me and God are doing so many important things that I don't even have time to stop and consider like, did you like this or not like this? It's like, I don't care. Like this is, I'm getting it done and staying in the zone of knowing exactly who my audience is because people, their opinions can really affect how we feel about ourselves and our performance. And their opinions are based off of sometimes some really weird things. You know, opinions are based off of past experience, past trauma, the house you grew up in, the church you were raised in. Like they aren't always great indicators of truth. Now it could be the truth for how they think, but like the truth and the reality of what's really going on is not dependent on their opinion, and
which can change too.
Totally. I mean, my opinions change all the time. So those are my five. I hope they help you if you're going through a difficult season in ministry. Just know you're not alone.
Why don't you go rapid fire through the five while I pull up the Fabulous Four trivia game.
Okay. Yay! Don't panic. Evaluate the health. Is it you? Are you the problem? Stay consistent. Focus on what's important, relationships, and know your audience. Well done, good and faithful servant.
Well done, good and faithful servant.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a Fabulous Four trivia game. Yay.
Yay.
Dog breed edition.
It's time for some fun. Let's play the Fabulous Four trivia game. Yay.
Number one. What is the most common dog breed in the United States? You only get one guess, too.
Fine. A golden retriever.
Close. Labrador retriever.
So basic.
You get like half a point for that. Stephen King's book and movie Cujo was based off of a dog of what breed?
Is it a Rottweiler, or am I thinking of Turner and Hooch?
Is that your guess?
What is a Rottweiler?
I thought it was a German Shepherd. I've clearly never seen or read Cujo. It was a Saint Bernard.
Oh.
Which, when I saw I was like, it doesn't sound scary
like
at all.
Beethoven.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. 0-0. No, 0-2. Which super sniffing dog breed was the first animal to have its evidence deemed admissible in U.S. courts?
Bloodhound?
You're right.
I just thought it seemed too easy.
I wouldn't have known. All right. True or false? Dalmatian puppies are born without spots.
True. I know that from 101 Dalmatians. Cruella did not want the dogs until they grew up because she goes, "Where are the spots? Where are the spots?" Like that. Also, I'm very disappointed you didn't ask me any questions about dachshunds.
It's because you'd probably know all the answers.
Yeah. I was excited as soon as you said dog questions. I'm like, where's the dachshund question?
Dog questions, not dachshund questions.
Dachshunds are dogs. Or are they? Maybe they're angels in disguise. It's like that verse, some have entertained angels without knowing it. It all makes sense now.
Well, the ones that we've owned have destroyed our house, so I would say they're probably
not
angels.
It was a test of faith.
All right, this is the community comment of the day. This comes from Jacob Moyer, and he says, "Hey, Jeff and Kristen, your videos are gold. Content is on point, and your communication skills are so good that I always listen to your content on 2x speed." That's fast.
You're welcome,
I've
Jacob.
I've tried that, not with obviously our podcast, but with other people's.
I'm
I don't think
it.
I can pick up the info. So I'm not going to say it's me.
Challenge
if
accepted.
If she gives you information you can handle on 2x speed, then God bless her and you.
Wow.
But I don't
impressive.
Think I can do that. I'm a 1.5. That's my go-to.
Wow. I'm going to try. I never think to do that. And then people mention it. I'm like, oh, yeah. That's such a good idea.
Who out there, though, is using the 0.5? Yeah.
Probably doesn't sound quite like that. I couldn't. It would drive me insane.
Yeah.
I'd rather listen to something too fast than too slow.
Oh, totally. And then you just kind of skip back. And if you didn't get it, you didn't waste much time because it's 1.5 or 2 speed. So thank you, Jacob. We appreciate your
Woo-hoo!
Comment.
Thank you, Jacob.
And we thank you guys so much for watching and listening. And we will see you next time.
Wait. I can't do it. Boom. Why can't I do it?
What are you trying to do?
When your lips go like
like that?
There it is.
Not really.
The air was in the wrong spot.